doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case loving you. No pills gonna cure my ill. I got a bad case loving you.
Listeners, I read an article this week that Google is getting closer to launching a personal health record program called Google Health, and they hope to entice you to participate. Well, what is Google Health meant to be? Well, like Microsoft's Health Vault, Revolution Healthcare, the application is offered free to patients who wish to store their medical information online. The idea is that you input all your important information, everything from your blood type to test results to health insurance information. It's easily updated and it can be accessed when needed. Now, all three of these programs, plus dozens of others out there, claim that if you put your information on their servers, it will be secure. And as a final enticement, as I said, many of these programs are free, but not all of them are. There's some controversy around them, however, and in the studio with me this morning is Rosemary Nelson to talk about them. Rosemary is a management consultant to physicians' practices across the country. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning, Tricia.
So actually, this is a few different conversations, isn't it? There are a couple of different ways these kinds of records are kept. So let's make that distinction first. All right. Let's start with the EMRs, which are?
Sure. EMRs are electronic medical records, and physicians' offices may be using those in place of paper charts. And some of those EMRs may have what is called a patient portal, where the practice can push information out to the patient, usually using a secure site behind a firewall. So the patient might only get an email saying, please log on, connect to this URL, this hot link, and it will take you to the site where you have a password and you can look at perhaps some lab results or other information.
Well, the big benefit, I think, to EMRs is the fact that that information gets into a network of physicians that share information. So maybe the hospital, the practice, whatever. And so if something happens, particularly an emergency, and you're there, they can call up your information and they've got what they need to have. And I see that as a huge benefit. But now let's talk about the ones that are a little bit different. These are the personal health records, and this is where patients get involved in inputting their own information. What are the different kinds of those?
The PHRs, the personal health records, can be accessed via your web browser on the internet, and there are some that are sponsored by these big conglomerates and multiple commercial entities where they're looking for information and they're letting you host your data. And there are others that are sponsored by some associations within the healthcare community looking to improve operations, looking to improve the patient-provider relationship, and those are equally easy to use and access.
And accessed, and some of them are free, and some of them cost like a monthly fee or an annual fee to participate, right?
Right.
And I believe doctors can get the information from them in some cases if the patient gives them a password?
In some cases, the patient can release their password and allow others to access those. In other cases, it may be simply a URL that the physician can point to and use that password.
A URL meaning just a
meaning
web address.
That hot link, right. And in other cases, it may be something that the patient can have auto-faxed to their provider.
Oh, good. You know, I get a little bit nervous, as every patient's advocate, I get a little bit nervous when we start talking about privacy and security issues. And some of the big conglomerates you mentioned, and I'll say what they are, they're MSN, they're Google, the Revolution Health, while they have a lot of great services they provide, I get nervous about people putting their information on those because people don't know that some of that information will be mined. It won't be as individuals, it's usually as big groups of people, and they'll start seeing a lot of advertising that they wouldn't see in other places. Those make me a little bit nervous, but you were telling me this morning about some not-for-profits that host these kinds of things. Can you tell me more about those?
Yeah, I think that there are some great benefits to using these sites, and I encourage people to use them, and I use them myself for a lot of reasons, and I'll share some of those. A couple of the sites that I think are worth exploring, www.ihealthrecord.org and www.myphr.com.
PHR, personal health record, and you know, we'll put links from our HealthLink on Air website.
That's great.
Okay, good. Tell us more about them.
I like these sites because I don't have any intrusions with pop-ups or advertisements. They're also well organized and they can help my providers because I can complete that online, I can print it off at my home and bring it into my practice. If I see a couple of different providers, I don't have to fill the same information out twice. I can maintain the information that I want to share, it can be accurate, and I can do it at a time when I can remember all the information. For the benefit of the practices, you know, they need to try to solicit out from those patients what they've had. Gee, when was that last mammogram, Rosemary? Are you due? When was your last tetanus? Those are important things for the care of the patient, and we can't always remember. We think that we'll never forget when we had that colonoscopy, but you know, it might be something we want to block out.
This is true.
So I think that from the benefit standpoint for the patients and the practices, there's a tremendous advantage. And if people are a little bit concerned, you know, you raise the issue of some of the things that you can put in there, your insurance contract number, your blood type. If there's something like that you don't want to share, you simply don't have to put that in. And then when you arrive at your patient's, your practice, your physician's practice, you fill in that piece. You give them your insurance card.
Yeah.
But if you have no qualms about accessing the information that you might share with others in your care, that's a great place to store it.
You know, I also know that some of these programs, you can download an application and you can keep it on a little thumb drive, one of those little portable drives. Carry it in your purse, stick it on your keychain, something like that. So if you're nervous about putting the information on the internet, at least you can keep it electronically and you have it with you. I think that's probably a benefit,
I think that
too.
Thumb drive is a great idea, especially when you consider the mobility of our society and snowbirds who are being seen by physicians in one state and then another state for part of the year. So there's a lot to be said for that, because we are a society that has multiple problems, and in the aging demographics, we probably have lots of things we need to share across many practices.
You're absolutely right. Well, Rosemarie Nelson, you know what? This has been a great conversation. I know it's helped our listeners, and I thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Worker bee-itis, or from driven to livin'. Spring. And those never see 'em except in the big crayon set colors are popping and flashing and splashing from the ground and the bushes and the trees. My brain is saying, get out of the office, school's out for summer. Then I look around and see piles of Do Me Now stuff pushing against my keyboard and stacks of used to be priority but lost track of its stuff further away and the get to sometime before retirement stuff on tops of the chairs and then the came in the mail sorta, the pulsating, growling blobs snapping at my ankles from under the desk. And my good little worker bee voice in my head says, you can't go on vacation, too much to do. How do we know if this is good judgment, fellow neck uppers, or a case of worker bee-itis? Let's take the From Driven to Livin quiz, abbreviated version, of course, because we're in a rush. Just a couple questions. Do we wake up mumbling, my boss is such a jerk, and so is her mother? At the kid's birthday party, instead of happy birthday, do we want to sing, take this job and shove it, I ain't working here no more? That would go over well. Do we use vacation days for the time we sleep so we won't lose them at the end of the year? Anything remotely resembling a yes, we're in trouble. How to change this one? First, if we're worried that working less than 110% all the time will mean less productive, less creative, ultimately mean less money and missing out on the big promotion, it might help to know more and more research shows downtime is essential to better work and lives all around. Recent study found that when we multitask, we're actually less productive. Another found that when we don't get enough sleep, we're less productive and less creative and more cranky. Other studies find that we remember stuff better if we sleep after learning it than if we don't. Bottom line, the brain needs rest to be at its best. So next time we're at the fork in the road about adding to the inbox or not, ask if we have the time and energy to add this one to the pile. And if the answer takes a while coming back because we can't concentrate on the question, or it comes back in a growl, or we start plotting what size tack to put on the boss's chair for asking us to do it, take a deep breath and consider a break, a vacation. And consider a long weekend. Studies show they can refill the tank too if we just don't have enough time to take a big break. Meet you at the golf course. Without my cell phone. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.